Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to At Home with Victoria, a news and entertainment show on the Blog Talk Radio Network. Now, here's entertainment co-host Michael Kay.
Good evening, everybody. It's Michael Kay, and I apologize for a little technical glitch right now, but welcome to another edition of At Home with Victoria. My name is Michael Kay, your entertainment co-host for tonight. Tonight, we're talking with the lovely and talented Daphne Clark Hudson, Dr. Daphne Clark Hudson, who is a nationally known empowerment specialist, inspirational professional speaker, and certified life coach. I had the opportunity to meet with her probably around 2 months ago when she had me on her show, a dynamic woman. You're going to just love her to pieces. But first of all, as you can notice, the lovely news lady, Victoria Gaither, is away today. She's actually in New York City in Manhattan, living it up, and so I gave her the night off. But before we go ahead and get to Miss Daphne, I'm going to go ahead and bring on Mike Collop. Mike Collop is actually a friend of mine who is a big Drew Stevens fan, as much as I am, too. So with no hesitance, let's go ahead and bring on Mr. Mike Collop. Mike, are you there?
I'm here, Michael. How are you?
Hey, buddy. Sorry for that little glitch at the beginning. It didn't sound too bad, I hope.
No problem at all. It didn't sound bad at all.
Cool beans. So tell me a little bit about Drew Stevens. I know that I love him. I know that he was born in the UK. And what more can you tell us about him?
Well, he's been singing music since about the age of two. He started his career overseas in Europe, in the UK, and moved back to the States and has been performing locally and for about, I guess, 20-plus years now. He performs, in, like I say, in Maryland and throughout Florida, as well as he's played some gigs over on the West Coast. In LA as well.
Great. What was his what would you say his style of music is? How would you describe him? What other artists would you compare him to?
Well, he's he likes rock. He sings a lot of rock music, some pop. He's got quite a few sounds, but I personally think he sounds a lot like Daughtry.
Yeah, he sounds a lot like Daughtry, absolutely. What do you say we go ahead and give him a little bit of play?
It sounds good to me, Michael. That would be great.
Great. Everybody, you're going to listen to Drew Stevens' Cold. And Cold is actually off of his latest album, is that correct?
That's right, Michael. It's off of his new album called Please Excuse the Machine.
Right. Yeah. Give a listen, everyone. Enjoy.
I'm cold, and nothing can move me, nothing to save me, leave it alone. It changed. You did all you could do, you see, and now it's time. and nothing can move me, nothing can save me.
To Drew Stevens, Cold, off his latest album, Please Excuse the Machine. Mr. Mike, tell us where we can find Drew Stevens, and it's Drew Stevens with a V-Y-N-S. Drew Stevens, Stevens. Where can we find him?
You can go to drewstevensmusic.com. Mm-hmm. He's also available in Reverb Nation. He's got his CDs out there, and so you can buy his singles or the entire CD, first CD called Waiting. Mm-hmm. And he's also on Facebook and Twitter as well.
Fantastic. Fantastic. I look so forward to having him on the show. We've talked about this a few times, so he'll certainly go ahead and be coming on very, very shortly. But on behalf of At Home Victoria, I'm going to do this. And please tell him that we love him and we're going to have him on real soon, okay?
Absolutely will do, Michael. Thank you very, very
Mike,
much.
Mike, you're the best, buddy. Thanks for calling in.
You're welcome.
Take care. Mm. Ladies and gentlemen, that was Drew Stevens singing Cold. We're going to hear a little bit more of him at the bottom of the hour, but I don't want to keep this lovely, beautiful, young Montego Bay goddess lady waiting. She is my favorite. She is my soul sister. We are two strong black women, and I just adore her. So, ladies and gentlemen, I will just go ahead and bring you Daphne Clark Hudson. Welcome to At Home with Victoria, Daphne.
Well, thank you, thank you, thank you, Michael.
My pleasure.
I was listening that Victoria has the night off, and I said, God, I'm so thankful that I love Michael.
Oh, wow, right thing
that
to say.
That means I enjoy hanging with you this evening, but what an honor it is.
Well,
and I just want to thank both you and Victoria for the short time that we have established a friendship.
Yeah.
It feels as if it has been a lifetime because you are both such amazing people doing amazing jobs, and it's just an honor and a privilege to know you both.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much. And I consider that to be a mirror statement. I'm a mirror, Daphne. You are the helper. You are the giver. You are the understanding life force that so many people are just treasuring. And I treasure you. Victoria treasures you. But let's get into what makes up Daphne Clark Hudson, shall we? Let's go back a little bit. Born in Montego Bay.
Yes. Outside of Montego Bay, actually, I entered Montego Bay out of a country, an amazing country district by the name of Paintstown. I actually went to Montego Bay when I went there for nursing school. I'm a country girl in the mountains of Boggs/Paintstown. No electricity, no running water. The outhouse, taking a bath in the wash tub.
Yeah.
So it began way back there.
So you're a fancy girl.
Huh?
You're a fancy girl.
Yes. Yes.
Absolutely. Now, let's go to the age of 13 years old when you had your first taste of actual heartbreak when your mother passed at 13. Is that correct?
Yes. My mother, Leonora Carlett Clark, Mama as I always call her, she was an asthmatic. And I was an only child, and when my mother would have her asthmatic attacks, I had to stay home from school to be with her because my father is always out working the farm.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they used to network. I think that's where I learned networking from, because the men back when I was growing up, they did not have tractors, and they couldn't afford tractors, so they plow each other's soil for the farm. Mm-hmm. So, you know, my father was busy doing that, and my mother died at age 13 from an asthmatic attack, and I had to go live with one of her sister, her second sister. My mother has five sisters, and she was the eldest.
Mm-hmm.
So my father sent me to live with my auntie.
Mhm. And she wasn't a kind auntie. Is that what I'm reading actually?
No, she was not. And you know, I'm so thankful that we are having this conversation now, because maybe about 6 years ago, mm-hmm. I was on a local cable TV show. And the host asked me a similar question about growing up, and I shared about it. And he uploaded the show to YouTube. So it's out there in cyber world.
Right, we'll look it up.
And one of my auntie, as a matter of fact, my mother's youngest sister, who is now in her 70s, I don't know if she saw it or someone told her about it. And she take it to mean that I am bringing shame and disgrace on the family because that's out there. And it so happened that early this year, we lost a family member. And after the funeral, my auntie decided, one of the other aunts decided she wanted to have a family meeting. And it was then, Michael, that it came out in that family meeting how hurt my auntie was about what I said, about what my auntie did. And I said, you know, if there ought to be any shame, I should be the one that should be shameful.
Absolutely.
Because I was the one that was ill-treated. I was the one that was not sent to school. But I said, you know what? That has made me stronger. I'm holding no hatred. And I'm not ashamed of what happened. Because, Michael, it was back then that I began overcoming adversities. So when I am sitting here today proudly embracing the title of an authority in the area of overcoming adversities, I know what I'm talking about.
Oh, honey, I absolutely understand, especially because your aunt had a grocery store, is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
So you
mm-hmm.
were constantly working in the grocery store and couldn't actually continue your studies, and actually, believe it or not, with being a doctor now, actually didn't even make the high school entrance exams because
right.
you were working so very hard.
Exactly. And my mother had died before then, and I passed it half. And my father could not afford to pay for me to go to the high school.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't go to high school. But as I grew up, after Mama died, Michael, one of the things that Mama would say to me when I used to take care of her while she was going through the attack, she always said to me, "Sweetie, you are going to be a real nurse one of these days."
Mm-hmm.
The only difference, she said, you're going to be wearing a uniform and a cap.
Yeah.
And after Mama passed, Michael, I could hear her voice in the back of my head that I was going to be a nurse. I was going to be a nurse.
And you did graduate from nursing school, going part-time on the weekends. Is that true?
Well, no. Back in Jamaica,
mm-hmm.
I went to the local hospital because the plan was for me to go to England to study nursing. But Mama died and all of that. That didn't happen. So I actually moved into Montego Bay. That was when I went to Montego Bay and went to the local hospital there, St. James Hospital, and enter into their nursing program there. And because I did not attend high school, there is a male high school there in Montego Bay, Cornwall College. And they were offering what we call extramural classes, which is a continued education here,
mm-hmm.
through the University of the West Indies. And I signed up. So after nursing school in the day, I would go in the evening I was taking health science, I was taking biology, I was taking math and English classes. And then I would graduate from those, and then I would take some more until I got some subjects under my belt.
Right.
And then I came here, and they're asking me for high school diploma, which I didn't have. So I had to go take the GED.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Wow. If you're just tuning in to us, you're listening to Dr. Daphne Clark Hudson on air with Michael Kay at Homeless Victoria. I want to thank everybody in chat. Cheryl Wood, Mar Ben, thanks for producing. Mike Cullop, you heard him at the beginning of the hour, and Stephen McGraw. To continue on the painful learning path, you know, I love these stories, Daphne, because anybody who is empowering or able to enrich another person's life has to have crawled through a pile of duty. I hate to use that term, but everybody did. In 1985, you moved to New York to join your husband.
Mm-hmm. Surprise, surprise, surprise.
And then another rude awakening.
Yes. You know, my husband came here because I'm always an entrepreneur at heart. As I look back over my journey, I realize I learned that from my grandfather, Edmund, which we will probably talk about later on. So while my husband came here, supposedly he was going to go to school. However, he was involved in tourism back in Jamaica. So he was living a double life. So he came here to go to school, but he was not going to academic school. He was going to Roman school. Because one of the women he met there while he was working in tourism, they established a relationship, and that was the reason he moved here. So when I would come here to visit Michael, he would visit me at his sister's house and make believe that that is where he was living. But you know, Michael, you can ask your mama or your sisters, or any good girlfriend you have, a woman's intuition is never wrong.
Absolutely.
And while I was there, my spirit was in turmoil. And I was saying, something is not right. It didn't feel like he lived there. He wasn't acting like he lived there. The surroundings did not look like he lived there. And one of the days when he left and said he was going to go to work, he wasn't going to work. He was going home to the other woman. And I just did my search and my investigation and found out that what I was suspecting was correct. And needless to say, by the time I got back home, I was pregnant with my son, Javonte.
Right.
And I was in Jamaica at that time, yes.
And so when did you actually move to New York to stay?
1985.
So you went back and forth a lot?
When I came, yes. Well, I didn't answer what you asked, because when I came in 1985, that was when I found out that he was indeed living with that woman. So I filed for what was known as an uncontested divorce. I tell you, Michael, when I was studying to do my nursing state board, I used to stay in what they call assisted living because I was working as a companion for elderly patients. And when I was riding the train home from Palisade in New Jersey to go to New York, I saw a sign up on the train says, Divorce Associates, $299 for uncontested. So I peeled one of the little flyers off, and I made a call to find out what uncontested divorce meant. And they told me, and I proceeded. And I filed my divorce, and my husband at the time was telling me, well, why not stay together for the baby's sake? And I'm thinking, man, for my get pregnant, you didn't even act like a father. Now you're going to talk about baby's sake. I said,
Yeah.
We're going to stay together. It has to be for our sake, not for the baby's sake, for our sake.
Absolutely.
So I just took out of that relationship, and I have not looked back since.
Good. No regrets whatsoever trying to pursue your own excellence.
No regrets. And I know that this interview will probably come back to bite me in the butt, but that's all right. I'm ready for it. I'm a grown girl. That was even one of the things that my auntie, the one that was very angry at the meeting and say that I am causing disgrace on the family, That was one of the things she pointed out, that I divorced my husband and went and made life on my own. And she stayed married to her husband for 36 years. I said, wonderful for you. You made the choices that you want, and I made mine.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, and you know, just to, as an aside, that sounds like 36 years of regret. You know, you know what I mean? Because there's only so much crap you can put up with when you understand that your spirit and your soul is being diminished. You know, that's just the one thing. And I think it's so important. Sometimes my mother actually stayed together for the children too, and what it taught both my sister and myself is that no matter what, you stick to it and you put up with it and everything like that. And then as soon as we both graduated from high school, then she had left, and then for the first time we got to see exactly what type of a light was in this woman that was subdued by the male, kind of a thing. So I understand the tenderness of staying for the kids, but it really just teaches the kids to become copacetic. So,
that's
so
right.
I mean, you know,
that's
you
right.
have to stand up.
You got to stand up for your right. You got to find your strength, regardless of what happens.
Absolutely.
And I think what we do as a society is that we shelter our kids and hide them too much from the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And this is why you see a lot of kids grow up now and there's no tolerance in working out what is happening in their relationships, because they grew up in a household where mom and dad really wasn't speaking once the bedroom door closes, but
right.
outside in the kitchen they're acting like everything is right, and the kids never really know the root of what is happening.
Mm-hmm.
We don't include our kids in money conversation. And we don't include them in conflict conversation. And we are doing them an injustice when we shelter them from that. Because a lot of times, if we would expose these kids and listen to what they are telling us, we would not go down the path a lot of times of where we go. Because kids has insights. And they can guide adults a lot of times down paths that we don't even dream about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's very, very true. After you left your husband and you're pregnant with your son, how did you make ends meet? And did he give you a lot of money and everything?
No. Nothing. Because, you know, Michael, I actually had 5 miscarriages before I gave cesarean birth
really?
To my son, Givante. So when Dr. Tang, who was my gynecologist in Jamaica, decided he was going to put a Shirodker in, which is a stitch in the cervix to hold the fetus in. Everybody was so excited, and because everybody wanted me to have a baby so much. But, you know, my husband was here and I was still in Jamaica, and I was told by one of his friends that even when they were excited about me pregnant, my ex-husband was not even getting excited, because he said, oh, well, she has, she lost 5 babies before. And it hurt me when I heard that, and I never repeated it to him. And I said, well, when God helped me to bring this child in this world, I know he is mine, and I'm going to do what it takes to give him a good life. So, you know, I always, when he would get on my nerve, I said, boy, you know you are my entire bank account, because as I paid for my my obstetric care throughout and had the C-section and all of that, I spent everything I had. So I always take every opportunity I get to remind him, I'm looking at my bank account because I spend it all on you.
Yeah.
So I have no regrets in having my child, and even though my ex-husband had not acted as a father, not when I was pregnant, not when I gave birth to Givante, not when Givante was born, he promised all the time he was going to give, he was going to drop this off, he was going to do the other. He never came through for that boy. Never, ever.
Wow.
He never came through.
How
so
old is
I've
Giovanni
been a mama
now?
And a papa, and 1 year, you know, the kids are in school, and, you know, he made me a Father's Day card, and he, when Mother's Day came, he made me a Mother's Day card, Michael, and I cried.
Mm-hmm.
Because at the time, I didn't really know how to accept that and what it really meant. Mm-hmm. But as I get older, I understood that that, through the eyes of a little boy, 80 years old, he saw me as a father and he saw me as a mother. And I know boys need more than that, but at the time, that was what he saw and that was what he embraced.
Right. At the time that Giovanni was born, how old is he now, by the way?
Giovanni was 29th on the 18th of March.
Really? My goodness.
Mm-hmm.
But when you were staying in the Amos house,
mm-hmm.
did you have him at that point?
Yes.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, we were living in New York. And after I came to do the nursing exam, we didn't even talk about that. I was traveling on the train and met a woman who was in Mary Kay Cosmetics.
Mm-hmm.
And she told me that this company that drives pink car were giving them away for free.
Mm-hmm.
And you get makeup and you get to travel and everything. And I said, what?
Yeah.
I wasn't wearing makeup at that time, Michael. But I didn't go to my assisted living job that Monday. I called the agency I was working for and took off.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to the meeting with her, and all I wanted to know was how to get the car. Because they say you could get a free red Grand Am.
Mm-hmm.
And that was all I was interested in. So I asked the woman how to get the car. And, of course, all the other consultants sitting there, they were laughing because who is this woman just coming in talking about car? All I wanted was the plan to get the car. The woman told me, and I said, I'm going to be the first person who wins that car. I won the car, and fast forward, I became a director. I won the pink car as well. And then, you know how it is in sales. If you don't produce, then there's nothing going. I had a good time while it lasts, put some offspring directors on. But after that, my unit crumbled. We wouldn't meet production. People got lazy. And I had to relinquish my unit. But still with the entrepreneurial zeal, I still wanted to do business. And then in New York, I encountered a company by the name of Centura Creation.
Mm-hmm.
They make the knockoff perfumes. They're out of Atlanta, Georgia. I don't even know if they are still around.
Mm-hmm.
But they would buy all the designer perfumes, and they would knock them off and sell them on the street for $25, right?
Right.
You sell a bottle for $25 and $12 $50 is yours, and $12.50 goes to the person whose office you're working from, and they put that money in escrow to open your office so that you can train people and keep this going. So that's how I came to Danbury, Connecticut, to open my distribution office for the perfume.
Right.
But when I came here, the money that was supposed to be in escrow for us was not there.
Wow.
So here I have my 9.5-year-old child, leave him with a friend there, came up to Connecticut with the gentleman that he and I was going through the training together, and we were going to open the business as business partners selling the perfume. Came here, found the office space, and called up the manager that we were working under to come up and open the office, and there was no money to pay for anything for us. So with my son down in New York there, I was walking one day, Neville and I, we were going to the library to research about finding grants.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw a sign called Good Friend House, Good Neighbor House, at 111 Main Street in Danbury. And it was a shelter for women and children. And I knocked on the window, and the social worker came out, and I asked her what it was. She explained to me. I said, how do people get in there? And she told me all that I needed. Needless to say, I didn't have any other things she needed. But I'm always talking to people, and I met a principal of a school. I told her I had this child. The child was in New York, and I needed to get him here. I'm here to open a business and, you know, give her the whole spiel about why I'm there. And she told me, well, I'll call the superintendent up. And she called the superintendent up. Superintendent gave me a letter to get my son in school. I went down, picked my son up. We got to go into the Good Neighbor House. And the Good Neighbor House keeps you for a short period. And while I was there, I learned about the Amos House, which is a transitional home for families. So I moved in there, met two amazing women that I'm friends with until today. No one and I go to the same church, and the other one is still working there. And one was the executive director, and one was the case manager. And I began talking to them because I always like to talk to people. And I was always asking them to let me use the phone, and I was always searching to see if anybody wanted to invest in anybody and everything. And they just said, well, you are just so different from everybody that comes here. Because I was on a mission. I knew I was there, but it was only a stepping stone for where the Lord wanted to take me to. And I left out of Amos House. I gave myself 6 months. I stayed there 5.5 months. I found a gentleman who was living in Florida, whose mother was living in Danbury, and he wanted, in lieu of rent, he wanted somebody to live in the adjacent apartment to his mother's house. The mother's house was a duplex.
Mm-hmm.
And he wanted to have someone live in the next apartment who would take care of his mother, and they wouldn't have to pay any rent. So, of course, you know,
beautiful.
I grabbed that for my son and I. And at the time, I took a job at a group home for mentally challenged adults. So I was going there at nighttime, from 11 p.m. at night to 7 in the morning. And then I would go and I would look after the lady in the daytime. And then from there, I save up the money because I was working the job, not paying any renter.
Mm-hmm.
I save it up, and then I had enough. And I paid it down on the home that I now live in.
Fantastic. My goodness. Steph, I'm going to go right to the chat room. Fantastic story. A couple people want to ask questions, which is fantastic. Mike Collett from Pennsylvania wants to know, where exactly do you find your spiritual energy from?
Oh, my God. You know, I was born and raised in Jamaica, and my father was the people you hear they call Easter, Christmas, and he always go to harvest. To harvest is when all the farmers bring out their best produce. So my father wasn't a Christian, and he didn't go to church regularly unless he going to funeral or Easter or Christmas. But my mother was such a devoted Christian. You know, she would go to school. My mother couldn't read and write, Michael. But Mama would go to church, she would pray, she would sing all those hymns, and anything happened, you would hear her praying. And the one thing she always tells me is that with God's help, sweetie, you can do anything that you want to do.
Absolutely.
And as I go through life, and I have gotten so much stronger, because there was a time in my life when I always run to people to share what I was going through. And I did, until I realized, Michael, that everyone I was running through was like a sieve.
Right.
As I pour in them, it ran out. And I said, no, I don't need that.
Yeah.
Until I stopped running to people to tell them what I was going through. And I found a new found friend who I could talk to. I came here in this country, and I, as I say, I was always a Christian, but I cannot say I always had a relationship with the Lord Jesus Christ. And when I came here to the United States and I became born again, when I got the opportunity to accept the Lord Jesus Christ in my life, and I understand, I ain't got to run to confession. I ain't got to call nobody to help them to go in front of me to ask for what I want. I can do it all myself.
Absolutely.
And when I got that revelation, Michael, is that I just found a newfound peace that I know that so long as I am still myself. I found out also at that time the power of journaling.
Right.
And I realized that as long as I keep emptying out, what's in my head. And as long as I keep focusing on my authentic core, which is my heart, my soul, my spirit, I said, girl, don't be listening to what your head is telling you, because your head is playing tricks. I realized, Michael, that my authenticity was coming from my soul.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized how to separate them. And that was the epiphany.
Yeah.
That's
a huge aha moment.
Yes.
All of a sudden when the light goes on and you realize, oh, my God,
woo!
I've been missing it all along.
All along.
Yeah.
You know, Michael, a couple of years ago, I got the most amazing compliment from a friend of mine. And she looked at me with tears in her eyes, and she said, girlfriend, if you leave right now and go back to Jamaica, I'll go anywhere in the world and I never see you again. She said, I would wake up every day with you as part of me, because she said, I read a lot. She said, I've been a Christian, I've been a Catholic for a long time now, I'm a born again. She said, I've been walking this journey for a long time. But she said, until I met you and you became my friend, I didn't know what faith meant. She said,
wow.
I see you walk it and live it, and now I understand it. And thanks to you, now I've got it. Michael, if she had handed me a check for $3 million, it would not have meant that much to me, because to me, that's powerful.
Oh, absolutely. And I want to go back to your journaling comment by suggesting that I'm not a big journaler because
you're
I heard
a man.
Well, I'm a man, yeah, absolutely. And I just took my Myers-Briggs test the other day and stuff, and the information I found out was alarming. But usually it's the old Mae West comment, basically, whatever you write down, whatever, you know, basically you can be held liable for. But long story short, what I do believe the essence of journaling is to empty out in your brain to make room for better or for clearer, you know, and having the ability to go back and reread. Because sometimes when you keep it bottled up inside, you don't get an objective point of view. And
yes, and you shut down your creative process.
Yeah.
Because as you say, Michael, the scenario I like to use is a pitcher of water.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Right.
You got to keep pouring in to keep the pitcher filled.
Absolutely.
And if you keep that water from day to day in there without pouring one, it's not going to be fresh after day one.
True.
And if you want some fresh water, you got to pour out what's in there. You got to rinse the pitcher, and you got to refill it. And it's the same thing with our creativity. The more you write and empty, you are allowing your creativeness to flow. And I tell my male clients and everybody, I said, guys, I know men don't like that touchy-feely thing, but I...
You there, Daphne?
Yes.
There we go. Sorry we lost you there for a second.
No. I said, trust me and try it. And I said, guys, if you want to write it in code, because they think they don't want nobody to see them writing all that, you know, that juicy stuff. I said, well, write it in code where it's just you and no one know about it. But I said, until you try it, don't hit it. Especially when you are on the path of empowering yourself.
Absolutely.
You've got to write those things. And don't try to figure it out. Just write it.
Absolutely.
And as your life progresses, you go back occasionally and look over those pages. I encourage people to date your pages and put time on them as well. Don't only put March the 29th. Put March the 29th, 2011 at 8:40 p.m.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Because when you go back years later, and you look on 40 pages, you say, my God, I journal about this 40 times?
Yeah.
If you had not documented them, you wouldn't know that. And
very
you go
true.
Back and you look and you say, my God, These are the lessons that I've been getting. It's right here. The answer is right here before me.
Mm-hmm.
But I tell you, journaling is powerful.
It is.
Powerful, powerful.
Absolutely. Once again, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to Dr. Daphne Clark Hudson, Empowerment Specialist, I will say, and Life Force Beyond. Daphne, I'm going to go back to the chat room now. Marilyn Bennett, Tennessee, wants to know, when is your book coming out?
My God, I'm working on a couple. No, Marilyn, I actually have a book that I'm a co-author of called Conversation on Success. And that has, we have not been doing much with that. But I am in the process now of negotiating whether I want to approach some of the big guys or I want to go self-publishing. So, Marilyn, give me 6 months, please.
Oh, it's going to be a good book, Daphne, seriously.
Oh, thank you,
it's
thank
quite
you,
a
thank
story.
You. God's been so good, you know. God's been so good, Michael.
God is good. Let's go to 1998 when you opened Clark Hudson and Associates.
Yes. You know, I was working at the United Way agency called Danbury Children First. And I went to a weekend seminar like you said you did, Myers-Briggs. I did
right.
Something similar. It was called the DISC.
Mm-hmm.
And
heard of that one too, yeah.
Yeah, and the DISC pointed out that I was a motivator. So I said, oh, no, I was biased in answering these questions. So I paid the lady an additional $2.99 so I could get the assessment straight off the computer.
Mm-hmm.
And when I got it with the nice navy blue background and transparent cover, I shoot straight for the summary page, Michael. And surprise,
yeah,
surprise,
yeah.
I was a motivator. So
that's fantastic.
I said, man, this thing is crazy. But
yeah.
Then I began talking to a friend of mine who is a scientist here in Danbury, and he's an Indian man. And I was discussing it, and he said, you know, he called me cheerleader. He said, cheerleader, you're right. You should be a motivational speaker. I said, Pinaki, you're crazy. Ain't nobody paying money for that. He said, yes. Don't you know about Norman Vincent Peale and all them? That's what they do, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And the people he was telling me about was people I read their work, Michael. I wasn't seeing them as any motivational speaker. You know what I'm saying?
Right, I do, yeah.
So I decided I was going to write letters to 10 people that knew me all over the place, Jamaica, New York, Atlanta. And I asked them a simple question. I didn't let them know I wrote to anybody else. Everybody thought they were the only one. What are some strengths you have seen in me? And if I would do some personal development work in my life, what would you suggest? And, Michael, when I got the letters back, it was as if everybody was sitting in a boardroom discussing it and brainstorming about it, because everybody saw me as a motivator and as an encourager.
Mm-hmm.
People gave examples of what I had done with them that changed their life. I wasn't even doing that work at that time.
Wow.
And they could say, well, I remember you saying this or that to me that made a difference in my life. I still didn't tell them nothing. So I hired a male coach. And the man told me how much it was. And I went and I gave him my check and I sat in the chair and he began his intake. And 15, 20 minutes in the intake, he pushed his chair back, put his pen down, and folded his arms and looked at me and said, I am not giving you the money back that you pay me, but why aren't you doing what I do?
Wow.
I am learning more from you now than I can ever do to help you.
Yeah.
So, doubtful Thomas and being so doubtful and everything, after he said that to me, Michael, I went and got the business form and filled it out and started my business part-time.
Yeah.
In 1998.
And then, how long after that, because you had your own cable show for a while called A New Day, Your Personal Guide to Personal Empowerment.
I still have that. I've been doing that show for, this is my eighth year. It is out in St. Louis, Missouri. It is here in Connecticut. And anybody who is listening, I'm looking for different towns and different places across the globe to have the show, because I'm looking. I think God wants me to start living in the abundant life from the work that I do. And I see him looking for me to turn that show into a real show.
Right.
And I'm looking for the investment to do that. And one of the ways I think I can secure that is by showing grantors the impact it is having on different communities. So I'm looking to get it into different communities. If people is interested in having it, just let me know. I'll tell you what you need to do to get it in your town. And it is an amazing show, Michael, if I may say so myself. A lot of times people will see me on the street at the post office or at Costco's, and they'll say, thank you. You the lady with the Christian show, right? I say, I'm the lady with a New Day show. And I laugh because I don't label it a Christian show, Michael, because anyone has an empowerment story. I don't care if you're a heathen or atheist. I don't care. Come and tell your story. I am about empowering and developing people. So I'm not going to let religion get in the way. So I don't carry the label of a Christian show. My show changed life. And I said, if somebody come there looking for Christianity and found it, hallelujah.
Absolutely.
But if you came with an open mind, didn't know what you're looking for, and you found some empowerment, double hallelujah.
Absolutely. Back to the chat room, Daphne. We've got, who do I have? I've got D.C., I've got Arizona, I've got Pennsylvania and Nashville. All of them are saying we would be happy to go ahead and write and do some sort of petition to get you in their towns.
Thank you.
Fantastic.
All they need to do, Michael, if I may say, is
please
call
do.
Up their cable station. Let the cable station know that they know about a show produced in Connecticut called A New Day that deals with the empowerment of communities. And they would love to have the show in their area. All they would need to do is to be responsible to accept the shows when I mail them out, to take them to their cable station and fill out a form. They have to fill out a form to be the sponsor, seeing that they live there. It's that easy. It's no financial obligation or commitment.
Beautiful. All that information is going to be in the chat room in a couple seconds. Now, you have two shows on Blog Talk Radio. Is that correct?
I'm sorry, Michael. I'm not hearing you.
Sorry, hon. You have two shows on Blog Talk Radio. Is that correct?
Would you say that again?
You have two shows on Blog Talk Radio.
I have one show on Blog Talk and one on WDKK Radio.
Right.
But it's the right now until I get my act together, Michael, with your help.
Absolutely.
I'm going to be Eagle Vision Radio. I'm looking. God wants me to do some amazing things with that. And I am just praying to the Lord to find me an amazing producer like you, Michael. I don't know if they're going to clone you or what, but I have a petition in to the Lord to find me a Michael somewhere to help me to manifest all the things that he wants me to do, because I'm looking for people who want to sponsor their show, sponsor the show, and just help to get the word out.
Well,
are
from
you
your
there?
Lips to God's ears, honey. I'm there, honey. Absolutely. Can you hear me now? Daphne, can you hear me? Well, Daphne, if you want to just go ahead and call back in, once again, you're listening to the fantastic Dr. Daphne Clark Hudson. I'm floored. This is a woman based of true empowerment, true understanding, true thrill of the human soul. She does have a show that's been running for 8 years now called A New Day, Your Personal Guide to Personal Empowerment, and she does have a show here on Blog Talk Radio. I'm just waiting for Daphne to go ahead and call back in. If anybody else has any questions, please go ahead and feel free to dial in. The call-in number is 718-664-9364, but just an absolute tour de force. Let's see if this is her. Hey,
yes,
honey, is this back you?
Yes, I'm back. I'm telling you, we have a powerful energy here. It's knocking things out.
Yeah.
But, yes, I'm calling back. I'm sorry about that, listeners.
Never a problem. Honey,
yes.
I have a question for you.
Yes.
This is from person to person on a personal level, because I have been fortunate enough to be blessed to meet people such as yourself in many walks of life,
yes.
Such as Debbie Tibbles, yourself, and when you're motivating people all the time, it's easy to go ahead and see the light in others. But my question to you, Daphne, is who or what motivates the motivator?
Well, Dr. Miles Monroe out of the Bahamas. He's a mentor. He's a dear friend. I read all his materials. And he's someone who I can reach out to, like I'm sure I can reach out to you.
Absolutely.
And he doesn't tell me what I want to hear. He tells me what I need to hear.
Right.
And George Frazier, he's the founder of the FraserNet organization. I met George maybe 12 years ago, and he's someone that I admire for his perseverance and his endurance in finding the gems in the black people.
Right.
And to show us that there's no separation unless we separate ourselves. And, you know, my mother, I keep thinking back about Mama, and, you know, Mama couldn't read or write yet. She knew what she was about. She instilled in me the great values and great morals. And my grandfather, Edmund, who I knew as a butcher, Grandfather Edmund had one arm and a stump, and he would butcher the goat meat, and he would carry it in a wooden tray, and he walked from district to district on his foot, and he sold that meat. So as I look back over my perseverance about entrepreneurship, I know I have gotten that from my grandfather Edmund.
Right. Very wise man.
Yes, and there are a lot of people who I read their books, because all I read is motivational stuff. I love Cindy Trim work too. She's out of Florida.
Mm-hmm.
I like her work.
Mm-hmm.
As well.
Have you read any of, I think it's James Redfield, The Celestine Prophecy?
No, and I don't know who that is. No, Michael, I haven't.
I'll have to send you the link. It's a book that I read several years ago that I reread every couple of years just to kind of keep myself back on the track, because it's not easy to get thrown off, but it's hard to be not.
Whew.
Sometimes consumed by external sources. You really
mm-hmm.
have to keep your powerful people close to you, you know, because there are people who I find, and I don't mean to sound negative in any way, shape, or form, but there are these emotional parasites that tend to
Hallelujah.
Cling to you, you know what
mm-hmm.
I mean?
And yes,
you don't get anything back, you're always giving.
Exactly, and drain you. And
yeah.
there are certain practices, Michael, that
mm-hmm.
I have. I don't watch television at home, and people say, you got TV show and you don't watch it? I say, yes, the neighbor tells me what I want to do. Because I rather reading.
Yeah.
I enjoy Daphne. I love my company. I love me.
Good.
And people will say, how can you be by yourself? You're not playing the radio. You're not doing nothing. I said, because I'm thinking. And I can think, and I can sit, and I can write something. I live alone, Michael. I've lived alone for many, many years. My son went back to Jamaica now, and I live alone now.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't have time to get lonely and all of that, because I enjoy my company.
Good. God, Daphne, such a smart, smart woman. Well, everybody in chat is saying things like, a question from Tennessee. How do you deal with the bad influences in your life? Let's go quickly there.
I have learned to call a spade a spade. A lot of times you're not sure if people understand that what they're doing is bad / negative.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to call it to their attention.
Mm-hmm.
And listen well to what they are saying, because your next move would be dependent on what they tell you. It's either they are aware or they're not aware.
True.
If they are not aware, then you just brought it to their attention. Let them know what it looks like to you. And unless they decide to change what is happening, they can no longer be part of your company.
Absolutely.
And you got to say it and mean it. You cannot be going back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
I got to cut some people loose, Michael. There was people was telling me, because I live in white people neighborhood now, I was acting like I better than them. I didn't spend any time with that, Michael. I just tell them my season here is finished.
Yeah.
I moved on. You've got to know when to move on.
And I think it's very important to go, and again, there's a fine line between assessing a situation and providing insight, and then there's a different thing about being judgmental. I really do truly believe that when you assess a situation, perhaps if someone is asking you for information, by withholding that information from them, you do intrinsically inhibit their growth.
Exactly, exactly.
Yeah.
And, you know, sometimes we are in organization or groups or friendship. Michael, we got to know that this is not salvation. You're not supposed to be there for your entire life. Know when the season is up and move on, and let people start to fly. People got to look
up
on these things like the eagle. What the mother does the mother make a couple attempts to drop the eagle? And when they wasn't successful, the next time they pick them up and go back and drop them again. But the third attempt, those babies start flying.
Yeah.
And that's what we need to do as well.
Absolutely. Daphne, I can't thank you enough. It is now, we're almost at time. I want to thank you so much for coming to At Home with Victoria. This has been the fastest hour of my entire life. I'm going to thank everybody in chat. Cheryl Wood, guest 9473, guest 9553. Marilyn Bennett, great job in producing chat tonight. Mike Cullop, always a pleasure, and Stephen McGraw. But Daphne, please promise me you can come back many, 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 many times. And next
Honey,
time Victoria will be here.
I'm yours. Just call and I'll be there. I just love you and Victoria. And Cheryl Woods, thank you, darling, for coming. You know, I've been off Facebook because AT&T is messing with my internet. They say I'll get it back on Thursday. So I wasn't even able to send it. So Cheryl, thanks for coming, darling.
Honey, just huge love. And once again, namaste, huge power, huge love and light, best energy your way. And please know that I just adore you. We are strong black women, and I really appreciate knowing you.
Namaste, my brother. I love you.
Honey, you have a great night.
You too, Michael. Bye, everyone, and thanks for stopping by.
Thanks, darling. Well, you've been listening to Dr. Daphne Clark Hudson. I can see why you love her. You know why I love her. The girl does not speak baloney. She shoots from the hip. She's very smart, has had a fantastic, powerful life story, and I hope you got something out of it. I want to thank Mike Cullop for coming on before and discussing Drew Stevens with us. Once again, you can find all of Daphne's information inside the chat room. Marilyn has done a great job putting that in. And for Drew Stevens, it's www.drewstevensmusic.com. But I want to thank everybody in chat. And before we go, we're going to listen to another song of Drew Stevens called Finally. But Victoria, I hope you get home safe from New York. And once again, thank you, everybody. This is Drew Stevens Finally. And this is Michael K, I'm sorry, for At Home with Victoria, logging out for tonight. Have a great night, everybody.
I hang on every word she said. Decorated, she's a vision from my bed. There's an angel in my side. If it means missing you, yeah, I don't wanna say goodnight. She turns up.
and our life seems talking on the phone. It's enough to know you're there, but you still dream of me, and that you say you care.
Been listening to At Home with Victoria, a popular news and entertainment show on the Blog Talk Radio Network. Plus, download the show on iTunes as a free podcast and like us on Facebook. Tune in again next time for At Home with Victoria with your host, Victoria Gaither.